the American Journal. We're getting ready to kick off the second hour of the program in just a little bit. Buckle up, more to discuss. I'm really fired up. Can you tell? I'm really fired up about all of the corrupt individuals that are still employed under this administration. Yeah, I am. When I get out of work every day, I actually go back and hit the books and find more stuff about these people because they've got to go. They've got to go. And I'll do just that once we wrap today's show up because I'm all over this. I can't believe Rand Paul's office really decided to cover for a corrupt DOJ official who went after an innocent American. They all know she's innocent. And they all agree that what happened to her was egregious, but here they are supporting those that actually did it to her. It's insane. It's insane. We're the government. We're here to save you. It's the same freaking thing. It's the same freaking thing. Makes me sick to my stomach. We're going to talk a little bit about the suspect, Brian Cole Jr. in a bit. There is more updates regarding his case. I guess the federal indictment has officially been handed down. It's quite the confusing. This is why we're gonna bring in an attorney on this one, because it's very, very confusing, the back and forth on all of this. So I'm sifting through all of that. Plus, we're also going to be talking about Iran in a little bit as well. You know, my good friend, Annie Cyrus, she is an Iranian who did have to flee to the United States. The government was coming for her. They still actually are. And we'll talk about the threats that she gets constantly. But she's a very outspoken journalist who goes out there and tries to expose a lot of the insane things that go on in Iran, I should say. And I just want to get to the bottom of this. What's true? What's not? What's going on the ground over there? Is this an organic group of protests that have broken out across the country? Or is this the CIA? Are the people truly revolting against the regime? So we're going to ask her about all of that in just a little bit. It's been really interesting seeing the footage coming out of Iran, though. You're like kind of cheering for these people. But then I don't know if this is just the CIA op. So we'll ask her about that and get her take on all things related to that. Plus, there's a lot going on in regards to the fraud. By the way, how many of you guys shop at Wegmans? I think that's how you say it. Wegmans, the supermarket. Well, the New York City store is actually capturing your biometrics. There was a story that took place, I believe it was on Monday it dropped, if I'm not mistaken. I saw it over at citizentrypress.com, and they brought you to the link of the story. But interesting enough, they do put up a sign now in their window saying that they are taking your biometrics. Now, why is it important? Well, obviously, why are security cameras capturing and storing our biometrics? It's a serious question. I reached out to the company, did get a response, so we'll dive into that in just a little bit. It's very, very interesting, though. I don't understand why we allow this to happen in the first place. They should never be able to touch your biometrics. They should never be able to capture it, store it, or any of that. I mean, this is insane. The company not giving me much in the way of details, but also confirming a lot, and their response tells you everything you need to know. Oh, the digital era. It's really bad. It's really, really bad. We'll also be talking about, I got a good chuckle at this. We'll play it for you in a little bit. Melania Trump is telling President Trump to stop doing certain things. She deems him as not presidential, and she thinks they're a little embarrassing. So he called her out. Plus, he also did a kind of like a imitation of what he would deem as a biological man pretending to be a woman in female sports. And I got a good chuckle out of it. So we'll play that clip for you in just a little bit. So a lot more happening over here in just a few moments. Don't go anywhere. In the meantime, though, make sure you download the app, alexjonesapp.com. That is where you go to download the app, whether you have Apple or, you know, whatever other phone you might have. I hate those people that you can't put in group chats with us. Those are the people that could also still download the app, of course. So head on over to thealexjonesapp.com. Also, if you haven't done so already, head on over to thealexjonesstore.com, because right now, when you make a purchase of any supplement, you're going to get the Atomic Defense or the Sheila J. Gummies for free. It's for a limited time. That sale is going to end on Thursday. Thursday's tomorrow, by the way. So head on over to thealexjonesstore.com. Because folks, it is cold and flu season, and you're going to want that Atomic Defense now more than ever. So head on over to the shop and make sure you grab that. Every time you make a purchase over at thealexjonesstore.com too, you're helping us out. You're helping us stay on air. You're helping keeping this machine going. And so we greatly appreciate it when you do. Head on over to thealexjonesstore.com. All right, more happening in just a little bit. Don't go anywhere. I'll see you in about 60 seconds. So buckle up. We got more to discuss.
Funded by you, and I appreciate your support. Very humbly, thank you for your support, those that have. Those that have it, what are you waiting for? Our information is bar none the best. The supplements are game-changing. The Methylene Blue, the Shilajit, the IRC Moss, the widest selection of Patriot Apparel, t-shirts, ball caps, hoodies, sweaters, you name it. But there's a deal going for a few more days where you buy any supplement and get a bottle of the Shilajit gummies or Atomic Defense Super Immune Booster free. You choose which free gift you want. That funds our operation at thealexjonesstore.com. I want to thank those that have stood with us. If you're going to buy anything, become a VIP. Just in your profile, $30 a month, cancel anytime, no charge. You get $40 every time you spend $30 to spend. So you make $10, if you're going to buy anything, you should be a VIP. Then you get special deals, special offers, special sales on top of everything. Also, you get big discounts when you use the app for Android or for Apple at alexjonesapp.com. Just links you through to get the free apps right there. So it's the same shopping cart online. TheAlexJonesStore.com. I want to thank you all for your support.
You're tuned in to The American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello.
Welcome back to The American Journal. We're excited you're all jumping on with us today. All right, there's a lot of cases to catch you up on. And that's why we're bringing in our big legal arm to do just that. Before we get there, the Brian Cole Jr. case, as many of you guys know, he's the man who's accused of being the J6 pipe bomber. I'm very reluctant on that one, but you know, there's a lot going on in court. Yesterday, there was apparently a new federal indictment that was handed down. And it's been very confusing to follow because I remember reading last week that it wasn't really like a federal thing. And then it was being shifted over to a different type of court for grand jury indictment. And it's all just very confusing. And although I'll pretend to be as great as people like, you know, Nancy Grace, I don't have a legal background. But you know who does? Our next guest. Please welcome to the show, Robert Gouveia. He's here today to give us the breakdown as to everything related to the J6 pipe bomber. And, you know, Robert, I'm excited to have you on the program today because you're an incredible criminal defense attorney, but you're also doing a great job on X breaking down all of these legal challenges, the back and forth in courts, and you simplify it so that every American can understand and follow these cases. I'm very grateful for that, Robert. So thank you for joining us. But this J6 pipe bomber story is quite strange because I didn't know the back and forth really too much on it. You know, last week we reported there was an indictment that was handed down, and it's kind of confusing to me, and it's a gray area. And I even think Judge Boasberg was also kind of confused and needed a day just to kind of reflect on what happened. But there was some type of indictment that happened by a grand jury, and they needed some time to reflect on it. So now we're seeing that there's a new federal indictment that was handed down yesterday. So simplify this, not only for our audience, but for myself. What's going on over in the Brian Cole Jr. Criminal trial, the case itself?
Yeah. Thank you, Brianna. Thanks for having us back here again. And Happy New Year to you. Yeah, it's been a little bit of a scramble out there in the DOJ prosecution of this case because it all goes back down to probable cause. So these are major felonies. Okay, the person here, Brian Cole Jr., the alleged pipe bomber, charged with serious crimes, with, you know, terroristic activities. And so when you're charged with a serious felony, the government has to have a determination of probable cause in order to keep you in detention. And it's, you know, we use a lot of these legalese, a lot of this language that can be kind of confusing. But what often happens in most criminal cases that are misdemeanors or kind of basic, you know, DUIs, domestic violence, to kind of bring this back down to reality, is a police officer will, you know, pull you over for a DUI. They'll say, "I'm personally observing probable cause of a crime, an intoxicated person behind the wheel of a vehicle." And then they'll file a direct complaint, right? They'll actually write a complaint. "I saw this person driving around in a car and there's probable cause." They'll file that. That will be the initiation of the criminal case against that defendant. Now, when you have a felony, right, that's a separate, much higher type of crime than a DUI. DUIs, they let you out, you know, most of the time on your own recognizance. So there's no incarceration component to the analysis. But in a felony, it's much more serious, right? It's terrorism. So they're going to keep you in custody. And so you have a right to challenge the probable cause, or at least to have a probable cause determination. So what happened in the pipe bomber case is the prosecution charged him like in a DUI or like in a kind of a lower level case with a probable cause affidavit that was drafted by the FBI. So an FBI agent wrote an affidavit, filed a direct complaint with the court, and that's how the charges came about. Now, the issue with that, and the reason why the government most of the time doesn't do that, is because the defense can turn around and request what's called a preliminary hearing, which is like a miniature trial that occurs to determine probable cause, because you just don't want to rely on, you know, a single FBI agent who has some biases. So you have like a miniature trial right in the middle of the court And the judge will ultimately come down and say yes, probable cause, or no probable cause. Now, the high-level cases like this, there's almost never a direct complaint or a preliminary hearing that comes after the complaint is filed. What often happens is that the DOJ goes to a grand jury instead. And we hear this all the time, right? Indicted. Two different ways to get charged, one by direct complaint, one by a grand jury indictment. And so in the pipe bomb case, the government absolutely did not want to have a preliminary hearing. They didn't want to have a full trial or anything like that. So they came out with the direct complaint originally. Then the defense came out and started demanding to have their hearing. They said, oh, okay, well, if it's just a direct complaint, we want to have our miniature trial here in conjunction with the detention hearing to get him out of custody. And if you can't prove probable cause, you got to let the pipe bomber go, right? You got to let him out of custody because you don't have a solid case. So the defense was pounding the table saying, we need our hearing. We want our hearing immediately. And there was a back and forth that you can get into the weeds on this about the continuances that were requested. The government says, we didn't even know that you were going to be asking for a preliminary hearing, which is kind of laughable because it's in the rules, right? If you're going to file by direct complaint, you're going to have a hearing on this. So what the DOJ did, the prosecutors, is when the defense now was saying, you know, we want a hearing on the preliminary hearing while we have our detention hearing, the DOJ then scrambled to go get an indictment. And what was different in this case is that they went to the DC Superior Court. So Brian Cole Jr. was arrested back on December 4th. And so they had, you have to have a preliminary hearing within a certain period of time after the arrest. So what happened is in DC, they didn't have any federal grand juries that were available to present the case to. And you can do both in parallel. So once you present to the grand jury and the grand jury creates an indictment, it basically replaces the original direct complaint. So sometimes, you know, you'll see this happen where the complaint will drop. We'll just kind of anchor in the charges until an indictment comes out and replaces it. So what happened here is the DOJ went to the Superior Court in DC, which you can analogize to like a city court or like a county court, right? It's not a federal court at all. It handles DC kind of city cases. So they went there. They got a federal indictment and then brought that back to, got a Superior Court indictment, brought that back to a federal judge. And the judge was saying, what am I supposed to do with this? We've got this indictment from a court that is not our court. You're charging him with federal crimes. And so at the detention hearing, which was last week, we were there in person. We just happened to be there. And it was very interesting to see it, well, you know, watch the judge kind of flesh through these issues. But he essentially accepted the lower level indictment just temporarily and said the DOJ is promising that they're going to go get a real indictment from the federal courts. And so that's the indictment that we just are seeing that just dropped yesterday. So the grand juries in DC were, you know, on vacation. They didn't have anything impaneled. And so right after the holidays, the prosecutors went back to the federal grand jury, got a fresh indictment that actually does match the federal courts, and then presented that back to the judge. And so now the judge, who just got assigned this case, and it's very interesting, this judge, we've had a lot of criticism of this judge. The judge who's gotten this new indictment is Judge Amir Ali. And he is the same judge who was the, he's a dual citizen. He was born in Canada, still has Canadian citizenship. So same judge who was very aggressive with the Trump administration in the USAID cases, was, you know, ordering them to pay billions of dollars to these NGOs and other things. And so he's now receiving kind of both of these indictments. And he just came out with a minute order saying, well, if we got now a brand new fresh indictment, isn't the defense demand to release the pipe bomber now moot because the government has kind of fixed their mistake and the case can proceed forward as though nothing happened. But the defense is saying this is ridiculous, right? Our client had his rights violated and he was held in custody for a longer period of time than he should have been without the government literally following the rules of criminal procedure and having the hearings conducted appropriately. And so their argument could have been that he should have been released temporarily and then the new indictment could have come back down and they could have just picked him up again. And the judge just kind of kept him in custody while all of this was, you know, fleshing its way through the system. But a lot of technical stuff. But as it stands right now, it seems like we have a valid federal indictment that the DOJ represented to the grand jury that's now gone back into the courts. And so the case will probably progress normally again. But we had kind of a little bit of a tense period because the defense was demanding that they follow the rules. And according to the, you know, clear letter of the law, 14 days to have a hearing and all these things, they really weren't. And the judge kind of feels like they were papering over this just to hold him in custody while the case progressed.
Yeah, and Robert, I'm like very much against that because I do think that there is something to be said there. He does have rights, and I don't think that's acceptable. And it was very obvious to the rest of us that this was being pushed forward at a very rapid pace. This was after the Blaze released a woman that they accused of being the pipe bomber. Then this person quickly popped up. Now, again, as soon as the Blaze released their report, I was hearing internally from my source that they did have another suspect in mind, and they did do briefings. The FBI did brief other agencies to give them the update as to who they believed was the suspect, and it wasn't the woman that was named by the Blaze. We've spoken about that, but it was very obvious, though, that this might have been just a reaction to the Blaze's report, and that had me really concerned. I want to ask you, though, because I think it's really important. When I was reading through the original criminal complaint, it didn't seem like a slam dunk in regards to the evidence that they had against Cole. It seemed like, okay, his cell phone's pinning off of certain towers. Okay, that gives you a category of potential suspects, yes, but it doesn't really say it's a slam dunk to me. Then there were some credit card transactions, which showed purchases that were made even prior, like a year prior to these pipe bombs being placed down. So that was quite strange, I thought. Was there any other evidence that we know that was presented in front of the grand jury that they actually had to tell the defense about after this indictment was landed?
So we haven't seen new disclosures from the new indictment yet. And I think that this discovery that's happening back and forth is voluminous, massive. We've seen that from both sides. People are talking about just gobs of evidence that is being poured out. But when we break down the government's case, to your point, they make it feel like it's overwhelming and you can't rebut any of the allegations. But it's really about three prongs. If you zoom out and look at the whole thing, you've got one, the cell phone pings, as you mentioned. You've got the materials and the receipts, right? So they actually found some end caps and some pipe nipples and other things. And then, of course, you've got the confession, right? So they say he was interrogated for 4 hours. After 2 hours, he then made this, extremely, extremely open confession that it described everything in great detail. And so the defense is going to have their work cut out for them. They're going to have to go through each one of those things and kind of smash back on those prongs. And when we were at the detention hearing last week, we were there, and the defense made the argument that there's a lot more to come on this. So they're going to just, go down each one of those prongs and knock them out. And as to, for example, the cell phone records, we recall here, we covered a lot of this when it originally happened, that the FBI said that they got a bunch of corrupted data from the cell phone company. Stephen DeAntonio, the FBI agent in charge out there in Washington, he said that to Congress. He said, we were demanding all of this evidence from the cell companies. They gave it to us. It was corrupted. And then Barry Loudermilk on the new J6 committee went back and got it and found that actually it wasn't corrupted at all. So then our defense would be, how can we rely on the cell phone data if the FBI themselves are saying that it was corrupted at one point in time and now suddenly it's all good? So that I think would be a strong attack on that prong. Of course, you've got the materials mm-hmm. and the receipts that the defense also explained. They said, we're not going to give you our theory on that. But at the detention hearing, he said they do have a theory. He said, we think we can come back and explain all of this. We've got, an explanation for why he has these materials, why he had the receipts, why he was buying them. But he didn't give us anything more on that. He just said, this is not the time for that. This is a detention hearing. We're talking about probable cause and dangerousness. And so he's kind of, holding that back for the future. And then the last prong is about the confession. And of course, this man is a 30-year-old autistic man, level one autism, which is the lowest level. But we've seen other reporting, and we covered the Blaze story where they went back and they found a traffic stop where Brian Cole Jr. was in an accident. And there was a police there with body cam. You have that right there pulled up. And you can kind of see his body language and see how close he's looking at the cell phone, right in his face, and compare and contrast that with the movements of other people. Actually, the person on the video, right? The actual mm-hmm. J6 pipe bomber that we got on the footage. And so we were watching him walk back and forth from the courtroom right into in custody and trying to gauge. He was in shackles and handcuffs, so it was a little bit hard to come to a very clear conclusion on that. But I think looking at a lot of these factors, I think you can make a very strong defense case that there's a lot of doubt here. And we've seen, by the way, the history of the J6 prosecutions and how egregious rights were violated over a thousand cases for years. And so it wouldn't surprise me if there were similar problems in this case. And the prosecutor in this case is Jocelyn Ballantyne, the same prosecutor who Enrique Tarrio, the leader of the Proud Boys at the time, he said that she came to him and was encouraging him to flip on President Trump, to actually incriminate President Trump in exchange for an awesome plea deal. He didn't do that, to his credit, and then got sentenced to over 20 years in prison, even though he wasn't there on January 6th. Mm-hmm. So she's still on the case. We've got, you know, CIA questions about the prior report that you mentioned. And I think that as this case develops, there will be a lot of opportunity for the defense to raise reasonable doubt as to all of those three prongs, but they're just going to have to kind of, you know, do it individually and then give the jury an alternative explanation. You know, why does he have these materials? Because if there's no explanation, I think, for each one of those prongs, then the jury is just going to combine them all into one and probably lean towards a conviction. So the defense has their work cut out for them, but they say that they're ready on this. They've got more that will be revealed soon.
Yeah. And Robert, I'm glad you brought up his walk, because that was something that was really key that we were watching and we were trying to figure out, is there any way we could see if his walk is somewhat similar? Because he kind of looked like the pipe bomber itself looks like somebody who is possibly doing a drill. Honestly, I mean, this is just in my opinion. This doesn't look like the kid we saw in the body cam footage. And I keep calling him a kid, but he's not a kid. He's a grown man at the time. But in the footage itself, I mean, he has to have the ticket that's being issued to him explain the officers doing just that and explaining to him that he was driving too close, and he's asking him, like, do you understand what I'm saying? So it's like, it's very obvious to me that he is on the spectrum itself. And that's what makes me nervous, that a confession is easy to push out of someone like that, because when they're fearful of consequences, they're more willing to comply and just give you what you want just to get out of a situation. And so that's why I was so worried about that. And the confession, I don't like the fact, I know his defense team called it out, that the DOJ is going out there. I think it was Judge Pirro is going out there. She's the U.S. attorney now, but she's going out there and admitting that there was a confession that was given by this guy. And I don't think that's acceptable to do. It also taints a jury pool in case the confession is thrown out by the judge. So that's one element that really had me fired up. But, you know, I also want to talk about something that happened last week before we move on. The DOJ was asked about the damages that would have been caused by these pipe bombs specifically, and asked if they had an estimate as to how much damage this would have caused. And they didn't have an estimate, right? They've had years to prepare for this and tell us how potentially fatal these pipe bombs would have been, but there was no answer to that. So why do you think the DOJ still hasn't looked into a possible estimate as to how much damage these pipe bombs would have caused? That's quite strange.
Yeah, it is strange. And they were very coy about that. The judge asked them that about that specifically at the detention hearing. He said, you know, if you're saying this guy's a dangerous terrorist, what would the danger have been? What would the damage have been? And the judge, I think, was trying to get into specifics about a blast radius. Is it just going to, you know, kind of just smoke and putter out and not do any damage at all? Or is it going to go critical and actually explode and, you know, send shrapnel all over the place and cause damage? And the DOJ was very coy about that. And I think with good reason, because they don't want to give the defense a bunch of opportunity to come back and rebut their specific claims, right? So kind of you make your money in the gray area. Don't really talk about it and let the defense have the burden of disproving something that they're not even really alleging. And the defense, again, they said they have their expert witness. They're going to come out and explain that these bombs were essentially inert, that they would not have any explosive ability at all. And I think that actually matches some of what we've heard from Barry Loudermilk and from the new J6 committee, because he said that when Kamala was over there at the DMC, that there was an advance team that made their way through the area, and the bomb sniffing dogs didn't alert to these devices. And, you know, of course, that's questionable, right? If they were explosive, why did the dogs miss them? Why did all of these agents miss them? And if they were just training devices, right, you would also expect the dog to probably key off on a training device, because a training device should have some volatile inside the device so that a dog could actually key off on it. So there's, you know, some contradictory reporting on it, but ultimately, it's going to be questionable, right? Are these actual bombs or were these something else? And could they have even gone off? Because if you just look at the mechanics of the bomb, remember that he got the kitchen timers, like the 60-minute kitchen timers, and there was a paper clip at the top that was like super glued essentially to the handle of the timer, so that when the timer would rotate, the paper clip would hit, you know, the other side of the circuit and close the circuit. And I've got quite like, when they found the pipe bombs, was that connection made? Like, was the circuit even closed? Was this just kind of a decoy meant to distract people? Or was this an actual explosive device? Because they're alleging that. So it's going to be very interesting to see. The defense feels like they are armed up. They've got expert witnesses. In fact, they even flew somebody in for that detention hearing, didn't use them to testify about a lot of things. So I think a lot more will be revealed on this, but as you mentioned, the government is coming down and they're very aggressive that they've got the guy and the case closed and stop looking into any other explanations on this. And I think there's just a lot of reasonable doubt here that will be matured as the case evolves.
Yeah. And we're going to keep our eye on that because I don't like the fact that they're just saying case closed, don't ask any questions. And I've got a bunch of questions. I was told I was going to get more evidence thrown our way just after the arrest happened because I was looking at the criminal complaints. There's not enough here to convince you this is the guy. And that evidence never came. So we're still following up with this, Robert. And we look forward to, you know, obviously continuing that conversation. But I want to shift over gears while we have about 3 minutes left to discuss the Supreme Court case that's supposed to be taken up sometime this month. It's in regards to West Virginia and trying to prevent, I guess, biological men from competing in girls sports. I mean, this is going on right now. The ACLU is involved in this case, and 130 congressional Democrats have also signed on to back the move to allow, I guess, biological boys to be in girls sports. There's a lot going on here, obviously. Can you break down this Supreme Court case for us and what we could expect to unravel this month? Because I think this is going to be very interesting as well.
Yeah, tons of activity. We've got oral arguments coming up in the Supreme Court on January 13th, so just about a week from now. Over 50 amicus briefs, so friends of the court, all piling in, as you mentioned, Democrats, ACLU lawyers, law professors, everybody's crashing in here. And this is really, it's about trans rights, you know, according to them. But from our perspective, it's also about states' rights and whether states can pass legislation to solidify their policies that they want enacted for their people. And in this case, it's very interesting because we just had another trans case at the Supreme Court over the summer last year. I think it was back in July. It was a 6-3 decision, and it was spicy. We read through the whole thing, and it was a lot of fun. But in that case, there was a state law that said that you can't have you can have treatment prohibitions for gender transitions. So medical prohibitions are allowed, and the Supreme Court upheld that. Amy Coney Barrett was very, you know, aggressive on that. And she said that the trans group is not a suspect class that has had faced a historical pattern of discrimination. And so they're not afforded special status like a racial group or like a religious group or like we consider, you know, women versus men when we pass laws. In other words, the trans groups are not in that category as it relates to medical treatment. Now, this is a little different because it's about sports. And the question is, what category, what standard of review does the court use when analyzing laws that go to sports? And when you get into the Constitution and the Equal Protection Clause, you can talk about strict scrutiny, intermediate scrutiny, and rational basis review. Rational basis is just the lowest level review. And that's what they found in the Scrimeti case. So in the medical context, states can pass laws prohibiting gender transition surgeries. So if that is extended in this case, then you know the trans groups will probably lose this one as well because the court is, I think, in the mindset right now that the states have a basis to pass these types of laws. And in this case, it's about, just as you said, pretty simple, about transgenders in sports. And there's two cases here, Idaho and West Virginia, and they're getting, you know, getting pretty spicy out there as we're marching closer to January 13th.
Yeah. Well, Robert, we're going to keep our eye on that. We're going to keep an eye on your X page as well, because I'm sure you're going to give us the breakdown as that develops in the Supreme Court. And we look forward to it because this is a very important issue, as many of these other issues are. And again, folks, follow him on X. You do a great job, Robert, at breaking all of this down for the American people to understand, simplifying it. And even the pipe bomber stuff. I mean, that was incredible to listen to you break all of that down. So thank you for joining me as always. We appreciate your insight.
Always an honor. Thank you, Brianna.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, folks, we have more to dive into in just a bit. Don't go anywhere. Buckle up because I've got my eyes on the House right now. They're doing their hearings into the fraud in Minnesota. But there's a lot more there, a lot more there that I'm going to dive into. Plus, oh, man, this is going to be a good one. My girl, Mahek Cook, as many of you guys know, we had her on the show last week. She's on the ground in Columbus, Ohio, and the Somalians have put out a warning about her. If she shows up, assault her. That's what I think that they put out there, because they're slamming the door in her face, assaulting her. But there's a lot more there, so don't go anywhere. We're going to play a bunch of clips for you just now.
Harrison, I am so excited to talk to you. I want to plug that Irish CMOS was a big game changer for me. I was having a lot of like thermoregulation issues, like morning severe chills and cold in the morning. All that stopped with the CMOS because it's a thyroid issue, and the CMOS has that iodine to heal your thyroid.
Isn't that amazing?
The methylene blue, yeah, the methylene blue, life changing. I love it. I don't need caffeine anymore. Like, it's amazing, but I'm trying to be quick.
It's all right. Hey, when you're plugging, we got all the time in the world.
I love his supplement formulas. I am an acupuncturist. I have a master's degree in Chinese medicine, and he's got some really good formulas put together. and they work really well. I really appreciate it. I stopped taking all of my other stuff that I was taking, and I just take a lot of you guys' stuff. I mean, because I love you and I want to support everything you guys are doing, but the formulas are good. I love the greens powder, but I've tried every different type of greens powder out there, and nothing has had as much stuff, amazing stuff packed into it, that has like a decent flavor to it. So the Optimal Human is like a daily staple.
It's good,
me.
Right?
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah. And, okay. And I'm not saying that because just for you guys, but seriously, I've tried so many greens powders over the years, and it really is the best.
And are we paying you, Katie? Did we pay you to call in?
I would love to work for you. I swear, Alex Jones Fisher is on like my mantle with all of my family pictures.
That's like, amazing.
We love Alex.
Some people call in, this person, you're paying them. But like, no, our products really are good. People really like them. It's true.
Well, I accredited him to like the life-changing experience I had when I decided to leave California because I didn't want to bash Trump. And I listened to Jones when I found him. And I'm like, I got to get the hell out of here.
Right.
And so I moved back home to Ohio. And 3 months later, I met my husband. I feel like that life-changing event for me was because of listening to all the information that he gives. He's not like predicting the future. He's just giving you the information that's hard to find, where they're telling you what they're going to do.
Yeah. Well, now you have a 3-year-old kid, so your life's going great.
Yes.
I've said it before, but with a lot of these products, like, you really don't know what it's going to do for you, because you might not know that you're lacking a vitamin or lacking a mineral. And it like happens all the time with iodine. Iodine is one of those things where like, as soon as you start taking it, you're like, oh, I'm not supposed to, and I'm not a doctor, this is not a medical claim, but people experience this. I've heard it from my friends where they're like, I'm not supposed to be tired all the time. I apparently just was lacking iodine. And it's like, you don't know if you're going to feel more energetic, if you're going to sleep better, if you're not going to have chills anymore. It's like people sort of go around thinking that that's the way their body is, but it's like, no, you're missing a key component. You're missing a vitamin, you're missing a mineral, and you don't even realize it until you start taking something from the Alex Jones store. So I completely understand that you start taking the Irish sea moss and suddenly something that you thought was just the way your body is. No, turns out you can fix it. You can fix these things. Again, I'm not making medical claims, but you can only find out for yourself what effects these things will have. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Thanks for the plug, Katie.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
You're tuned in to The American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back to The American Journal. We're excited you're all jumping on with us. As I look over to what's going on right now in Congress, it looks like they're doing some oversight. The U.S. House Oversight Committee is holding their Minnesota fraud hearing right now. Let's just dip in to see if it's all just political theatrics or if there's something of supplement or a substance, I should say, going on right now over in the House. Take a listen.
Minnesotans who overwhelmingly have made the state more vibrant, more diverse, and more prosperous. I also feared the selective interest in fraud in America, because at the same time that these crimes are rightly being investigated by state and federal authorities, a larger infrastructure for prosecuting fraud and white-collar crime is being dismantled. Let me give you a few examples. In February 2025, the Department of Justice paused enforcement of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, which prohibits foreign bribery, and criminal violations of the Foreign Agents Registration Act, which, as the name suggests, prohibits acting as a secret agent of a foreign power. Between February and April of last year, the department disbanded its Klepto Capture Task Force, which enforced sanctions against Russian oligarchs, and the National Cryptocurrency Enforcement Team. And last year, the department forced out most of the lawyers of the public integrity section, which prosecutes crimes by government officials, announced plans to dismantle the tax division, which prosecutes tax evasion, and shuttered the FBI task force that investigated congressional misconduct. More than just dismantling infrastructure for pursuing violations of the law, the government is, for favored defendants, appearing to enable it. In 2024, the Justice Department indicted Andrew Wiederhorn, the CEO of a casual fast food chain, for allegedly stealing $47 million from his own company. After his business donated $100,000 to the Trump inaugural committee, his case was dropped, and the line-level prosecutor on his case was fired. In 2021, the department sued Boeing for deceiving the government about the software that caused two plane crashes, killing 346 people. After donating $1 million to the inaugural committee, Boeing negotiated a favorable deferred prosecution agreement that the judge overseeing the case said, quote, fails to secure the necessary accountability to ensure the safety of the flying public. But he felt compelled by precedent to accept it nevertheless. The examples continue. Banks that contributed to the inaugural committee had litigations against them for violating consumer financial protection laws dropped. And so too did cryptocurrency companies that were investigated and sued by the Securities and Exchange Commission and who contributed to the inaugural committee. Crucially, those crypto companies that did not donate to the committee or other affiliated entities remain defendants of the government. The scale of these frauds involve millions stolen and hundreds killed, and yet they have received a fraction of the attention of the fraud that happened in Minnesota. This concerns me because we are both dismantling our infrastructure for fighting fraud and providing a roadmap for how those fraudsters who are prosecuted can buy their way out of justice.
All right, so let me step in here. Because, I mean, it's, hey, listen, we have to check those allegations out, but I think you should call it out. Fair. If it is going on, if it is true what he just said, then yeah, you should call it out. But let's focus on Minnesota right now because we can't let it be a deflection either. And that's what we're going to right now with all of this. The DOJ has apparently sent more prosecutors to Minnesota. That news dropping exclusively, I believe, originally in the New York Post. Fox News also confirming it. Obviously, they're both owned by the same owner, so it's like a piggyback of their brother sister's channels. So just tread lightly on that one. But yes, they are sending more prosecutors out there. Just so you know, they are claiming to be working on the fraud cases, and those are the allegations that are being presented right now. But it's interesting, because yesterday on Fox News, we'll play this for you in clip 7, because in clip 7, the DHS Secretary Kristi Noem, well, she's out here saying that state employees, well, they've known about Governor Waltz's knowledge about all this fraud for quite some time now. Take a listen.
So many Minnesota state employees were saying, Governor Walz, pay attention to this. People are stealing the money. These are not legitimate businesses. They are not legitimate nonprofits. And he ignored them. He told them to do their job and just follow orders and exactly what he was telling them to do and overlook all of these criminals. And they felt like very much whistleblowers who were being ignored or bullied into being quiet.
Well, it's very obvious that that is likely the case. We look forward to the investigation to see what develops there. But it's interesting because, you know, we're learning a lot. And I want to keep giving credit where credit's due. Liz Collins has been on this case for quite some time now, and I don't think she's getting the recognition she deserves because there was just an article, too. We could pull this one up over in Just the News. And this is based off of her reporting. Liz Collins has done an incredible job at exposing all of this. But cash was flowing from the local airports over in Minneapolis, for example. There was a TSA agent who she interviewed. We'll play that clip for you in a little bit. But TSA flagged for nearly $700 million in cash being detected that was in the luggage of these individuals fleeing. That's just from 2 years. It's obviously a massive amount of cash, and obviously it's all tied to the Somalians. But if you're wondering what that breakdown looks like, well, again, Liz Collins did an incredible interview. We did play it a couple of weeks back, but in case you missed it, take a listen to clip 9.
Well, I've actually seen a lot of things, but the most shocking is exactly that. I saw suitcases filled with millions of dollars of cash, and the couriers were always Somali men traveling in pairs. And they got through the checkpoint And it just really absolutely blew my mind the first time you open a suitcase and you see millions of dollars of cash. And typically what would happen is a Leo or a law enforcement officer would come, check their credentials. I don't know what kind of questions they asked them, but their IDs were always documented, and probably their plane tickets as well. So there is a trail of that out there. And I would believe with all the cameras at the airport that if they started there, they could probably find each and every individual that brought money through the checkpoint.
Obviously, this seems suspicious, if not alarming, given what seems to be a pattern here. So you're talking about millions of dollars flying out of Minneapolis, and you think it happened about every week or so? Is that right?
So it certainly seemed like it happened every week. The suitcases came in, and it was always, the MO was always two Somalian men traveling in pairs. Sometimes they both had suitcases. And so the process was, as a TSA agent, we would pull the bag, and then we'd bring them to a private screening room. And we would open the suitcase and make sure that that's all it was stacks of cash. And a Leo would come and maybe question them and for sure take a picture of their identification and I'm assuming their plane ticket. I'm not sure. So there is a trail out there between that. I mean, it has to be documented somewhere, and all the cameras in the airport, I would imagine if they'd like to find all this cash, they should start at the airport. Because in the 5 years I was there, I believe $1 billion went through the airport.
Yeah, it's very likely that that is the case. That is the case. They were so bold to do this right in front of our very own eyes. And unfortunately, our own government failed to, you know, acknowledge the simple, yet alarming signs of all of this. I mean, millions of dollars being flown out in cash. If you and I were to do that, we'd all be flagged, searched. In fact, I believe the IRS is still using AI to scan our bank records to make sure you report every last dollar, even that 601 cent Venmo transaction. So what the heck are we doing here? Somalians are able to leave with luggage that's stacked with cash, millions of dollars, and they just were able to do it? I bet you all involved are taking their one-way trip back to Somalia right now, which is good news, but not good news for the American taxpayers, who they have now supported another country with our money, of course. It's interesting, though. Dr. Oz is actually out here, and he's saying a lot in regards to all of this and how they're trying now to put a block to a lot of those fraudulent payments. He is the administrator for the Medicaid and Medicare services right now. So he put out this information. We'll play this for you in a bit. Clip 8 is what we're going to go to on this one, because he's detailing specifically on how his agency is trying to now block those fraudulent payments from being issued. Take a listen to that.
At CMS and HHS, we're increasingly worried about the deep rot within Minnesota's Medicaid and social services system, which are supposed to protect the most vulnerable Americans. The more we uncover, the more it becomes clear. It's much worse than we were led to believe by state government officials. We had previously learned that illegal immigrants were still getting care within allegedly state-only Medicaid programs that were actually using federal taxpayer funds. And because of that, we already withheld $1.3 billion from California, Illinois, and yes, Minnesota, which always seems to show up on the list of states with the worst fraud, waste, and abuse. But this is only the tip of the iceberg for Minnesota. We have an unfortunate announcement for the Walz administration. They have to admit they were warned. Last month, we instructed the Walz administration to produce a corrective action plan by the end of the year, which we received late New Year's Eve and found deeply insufficient. We don't want to hear, for example, that your state law doesn't allow you to protect federal taxpayers from Somali fraud. And we want a sense of urgency to fix this, as well as clear milestones to hold Minnesota accountable on progress. Enough is enough. I just notified Governor Walz we will begin auditing Medicaid receipts and defer paying on claims based on fraud, waste, and abuse. Until we can verify what is legitimate, We're going to defer payments for the 14 programs that the state itself identified as rife with fraud.
All right. Sounds fair. Sounds like something you'd want to happen. So we'll watch that as that goes underway. Obviously, Walt's not very happy with any of this, but it's not just him. Somalians right now are gearing up. They're teaming up, I guess I should say, to go after those who are exposing their alleged fraud. Now, again, the individuals who are on social media going out there and simply knocking on doors, looking at daycares and healthcare centers, these individuals, obviously, the business owners itself, are innocent until proven guilty. That's which they're out there. But Mehek Cook, who we had on the show last week, she is an attorney. She's an incredible attorney. She often appears on Fox and Newsmax. Now, I like her a lot because she's not really a corporate media person. She's just someone who tries to get to the bottom of the truth. I mean, she just wants to find out what's going on here. So instead of just sitting there and doing commentary on cable news shows, she decided to just start knocking on doors herself. And she's done just that. Now, sadly for Mehek, she is getting assaulted by a lot of these Somalians. They've actually put out her image and they're warning other Somalian business owners to stay away. You see Mehek, run. Don't let her in. Well, in clip 10, you're going to see what happened when Mehek walked into a daycare center in Ohio. It didn't go over well for her. Take a look.
Don't touch me.
Imagine leaving your kids with that guy. Probably not the best idea ever. But then again, were there kids there? Now, again, these are all just allegations, but the fact that he just assaulted Mehek, put his hands on Mehek for no reason, just another Somali man full of rage, doesn't like women, doesn't like being recorded, apparently. It's very, very interesting. Again, we don't know what his role is at the daycare facility. Maybe he's security. But it's really, really bad. Obviously, Mehek is not going to take this one. She is going to go out there and she's going to call police and get them involved in all of this because she's simply just asking questions. Maybe she's trying to bring one of her kids to these daycare facilities. They don't know that. It doesn't just end there, though. Mehek also went and started confronting healthcare companies, which she thinks are sketchy. Now, again, keep in mind, Mehek is an attorney. People were coming to her quite some time now, flagging certain very suspicious healthcare companies that they believed were committing fraud. So they went to an attorney to flag these businesses for her. So this isn't just her going on Google, finding random companies and targeting them. These are actual tips that have come into her, and she's going out there just to look. Just a look. Ask questions. She's not accusing them of anything. She's asking questions. Key point to all of this. But listen to clip 11, because again, Mehek is simply in an office space asking questions, and their response is extremely telling. Take a look.
What are you guys doing here?
I'm asking about home health care services.
Look, you're not the same. I know you. I don't think you know me. I'm not gonna shake hands. That's okay. That's fine. You can record whatever you want. Oh, I know. We're recording because I know you are just spitting a lot of bunch of BS.
What's the BS?
You're talking about Somalis. I've seen you so many times in Fox News.
I've spoken about the issue in Minnesota or Minneapolis in particular.
Listen. You are from India. You are not a white person.
I wasn't trying to pretend
I
was.
Listen. Get out of our house. You should not supposed to be here.
This isn't private property.
This is private property.
It's not.
It's a private
I'm
property.
I'm knocking on doors.
We've got every right to be here.
No, you don't have any right to be here.
We have every right to be here.
Why are you guys spreading lies?
Wait.
We're not spreading any lies.
Hold on a second.
Yeah, you guys are not supposed to be here.
Because your last name is Cook doesn't mean that you're white. You are from India. And you are just spent a lot of bunch of BS.
It's not a bunch of BS. Who do you think you are?
Who do you think you are?
Telling me that I can't ask.
Why are you coming to harass us?
We're not coming to harass anyone. You guys can go.
Listen, who gives you this job to do it?
And then you guys can ask them how this operated.
You have no right to be here.
We have every right to be here.
No, you don't have.
We have every right to be here.
There's no ticket to harass. You said we have.
We're not harassing anyone.
You just running around. You just go.
Just knock on the door. You guys are the ones that
are. We're simply asking. Asking questions, and then you guys are trying to intimidate us.
You guys are healthcare companies.
You guys are trying to intimidate us right now.
You guys came to our office.
That's fine. You can ask questions. Who guys are threat. You guys are trying to intimidate us. You're telling us we're not allowed to be here. Why do all of you have your phones out right now?
Yeah, because I'm wondering.
Why do you have speakerphone?
For safety, for my own safety.
4 hours after two.
No, that's all.
You guys have no right to be here. You guys got to leave right now.
Bunch of BS. You need to leave.
You need to leave right now.
You need to leave right now. You need to go away. Not very welcoming, not very kind. Why would they be doing this to Mihak? Why? She's a nice woman. She's a very nice woman. And I love the fact that he goes, "You are Indian." Mihak literally ran for office, and she ran for office by declaring herself as an immigrant from India. She's conservative, obviously, but they don't like her because she's on Fox News. Imagine having the name Mihak and then being accused of trying to be a white woman. No, she's not. She's just looking for answers. And she's tired of seeing American taxpayers getting ripped off. She'll be joining us likely tomorrow, possibly on Monday. Depends how her schedule goes, but we'll have her back on the program because they're not happy with Mihak knocking on doors, asking simple questions. And these Somalian men, thank God she had another male with her, because these Somalian men try to gain up on you in the hallway, like you see. They're trying to intimidate her. They're trying to scare her. They won't even shake her hand because they can't do that. No. So we'll see how that all unravels. Again, she's not accusing them of anything. She's just asking questions. Why can't they answer these questions? They're full of so much rage, so much hate. We were told they were coming here for a better life. Come on, you run a business. You can't answer simple questions? That sounds strange. That sounds very strange. Now, remember when I told you all that we should be hyper-focused on not just the fraud at daycare centers, potentially healthcare centers? I was also telling you that we need to be focused specifically on the homeless money that's been shifted around in this country, because Democrats designate like billions of dollars towards crunching down on homelessness in their major cities. But when you look at these cities, they're cesspools. They are obviously drug fueled. They obviously have an insane amount of homeless people living on the streets itself. And they're just throwing billions of dollars at the problem. But there's nothing that's happening after all this money's pouring in. Well, interesting enough, according to the U.S. attorney over in California, they may have just uncovered something big about the money that's been poured in. They're just alleging that there's a possible tie to the California funds that have been pouring in to possibly fraud in all of this. Federal prosecutors are warning about more arrests coming after two individuals were arrested for a massive fraud scheme, which says all we had to do was follow the money. And we realized that the California services that were supposed to be provided to homeless people, well, actually wasn't really happening, according to them. They're alleging that the funds were actually pocketed. These state funds were pocketed, even though they were intended for homeless housing. And now they are saying, the U.S. attorney over there is saying, that this didn't actually happen. They're accusing them of embezzling $2 million. I would say it's probably so much higher for a homeless housing project that should have happened, is created during the pandemic. And according to the U.S. attorney, that those funds specifically were used for luxury purchases for one of the defendants who was just recently charged in all of this. So again, a lot happening here. And it's probably just the surface of all of this, given the fact when you look at New York City, for an example. Like I told you, $750 million at the time, that was years ago when I used to cover New York City crime and corruption, was unaccounted for. That money was shifted over by the mayor, who was Bill de Blasio at the time, who gave that money to his then wife, who was supposed to crunch down and stop homelessness when she was handed over a $1 billion budget to do just that. And then when she was called in front of the city council, they asked, "Where's the $750 million? And she said, "Sorry, I don't have any receipts for you. But we used it. It was a good cause." Again, these people all need to be investigated. This is just the surface. And it's a little disappointing. It's a little disappointing that this keeps happening. But again, this is just the very beginning in all of this. All right, I want to play this next clip. This one gave me a good laugh yesterday. In clip 18, you're going to listen to President Trump speak about the advice he gets from the First Lady. And this advice is her telling him how cringe his dancing is. Take a listen.
And she gets up and they put a little tiny thing like this, little tiny. And my wife, by the way, my wife hates when I do this. She said, you know, she's a very classy person, right? She said, "It's so unpresidential." I said, "But I did become president." You know, somebody, she hates when I dance. I said, everybody wants me to dance. Darling, it's not presidential. She actually said, could you imagine FDR dancing? She said that to me. And I said, there's a long history that perhaps she doesn't know. Because he was an elegant fellow, even as a Democrat, right? He was the attack by Japan, you know, he was quite elegant. But he wouldn't be doing this. But nor would too many others. But she says, darling, please, the weightlifting is terrible. And I have to say this, the dancing they really like. She said, they don't like it, they're just being nice to you. I said, that's not right. The place goes crazy. They're screaming, dance, please. But the weightlifting, but no, the girl gets up. And you see, I want to be more, but I have somebody watching. I want to be more effusive. I want to really, yeah. But she gets it. And, drops the thing, walks off the stage crying. Her mother's crying, her father's crying. Guy gets up. He said, have you lifted before? A little bit. And he walks up. Bing. He could have gone, ding, 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 ding. I think it was 112 pounds, right? It's crazy.
Ah, the president. He's got a great sense of humor, and I love to hear how Melania Trump is coaching him and telling him how to be more presidential. She might be right about the dancing thing. And I think your wife will always give you a fair shake. Even though, okay, this dancing we're cool with, but the dancing on stage, I know a lot of you guys like this. Yeah, I think this is what she's talking about here. She's trying to save her husband from embarrassment. But the people love it. His fans love it. They encourage him to do just that. So it's great to see the first lady trying to tell him how to be more presidential, because she is a very classy, classy lady. I wanted to take a moment to give one of our top fans a big shout out today. It is Rosie's birthday. Happy birthday, Rosie. Rosie is a big fan of InfoWars. She watches every single day, according to her dad, Mr. Eric Spracklin. And so we just wanted to wish her a very, very happy birthday. Now, not only is Rosie a patriot who watches InfoWars, but she's a patriot who's still calling on the Epstein files to be released. How do I know that? Well, this is the proof. So if Rosie could get her birthday wish, it would be that the Epstein files would be released, and it would be that everyone except the victims involved would be unredacted from the big file dump. So happy birthday, Rosie. We really hope you get your birthday wish, girl. We really, really do. All right, folks, buckle up. We've got more to discuss in just a bit. Don't go anywhere. We got a lot more to unpack in just a moment. Plus, I'll be joined by my girl, Annie Cyrus. She is an Iranian who has fled, and she's now here in the United States, and she's exposing everything that's going on right now in Iran. So we'll have her on in just a moment. In the meantime, though, head on over to thealexjonesstore.com. When you purchase a supplement, you get a bottle of the Atomic Defense or Shilajit gummies for free. So head on over to thealexjonesstore.com right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nitric Boost, the all-time fan favorite, is now back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com. You've looked at our formula. You like it?
I did, and I do. Yes. Well, nitric oxide is a key. It's made by our own bodies again. It's made by L-citrulline and L-arginine, the amino acids.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Judy Mikovits, without me even knowing she'd gotten it and used it, came on years ago and said this was the best spike protein detoxer she'd found.
So you want to boost your own body's ability. The nitric oxide relaxes the endothelium, the vasculature. It relaxes the vein. So I use the two, your InfoWars. I keep that on my shelf. And I feed myself the Cardio Miracle, which is just for straight food. It's a different formulation than that one. And the two together are a 1-2 punch. So you get in your food the ability to make what you need and no more.
It is already a nationwide best-selling bodybuilding product for over 20 years. Bodybuilders take it as it helps grow muscles and better workouts and things. So for those of you that love Nitric Boost, it's back in stock right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And for those that haven't tried Nitric Boost, you are really missing out. Secure your Nitric Boost right now at InfoWarsStore.com. We're battling in the courts. We're still here. A year after the Onion said they bought us, we might actually hold on and win. But regardless, the shopping cart's there, the shipments are going out, and you will get your product. But if you don't order it and support us, we'll be off the air. So please take action now at InfoWarsStore.com and experience Nitric Boost for yourself. It's good for men and women. Get your Nitric Boost now, right now, exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. And thanks for being the reason, one way or another, we'll always be on the air. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost, back in stock.
Merry Christmas!